During Memorial Day at Lowe's, shop household must-haves for less. Save $80 on a Charbroil Performance Series 4-Burner Grill to chef up something special. Plus, get up to 45% off select major appliances to keep things fresh. Our best lineup is here at Lowe's. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 5/27. While supplies last. Selection varies by location. See Lowe's.com for details.
Visit your nearby Lowe's on Silver Drive in Columbus.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
A match made in hell? That could only describe the deeds and the relationship that allowed a twisted couple of Fred and Rosemary West to exist. As they would live to commit at least 12 murders together over 20 years. What drove this couple to such extremes, and how did they keep their murders under the wraps? That's what we investigate today on The Dark Side of Wikipedia.
Sometimes the human mind goes to dark places. Sometimes those dark delusions turn into a reality. A reality so shaded and gray, once all is said and done, the healthy mind is drawn into the documented retelling of these tragic events, trying to find logic, reason, and understanding where there may be none at all. This is The Dark Side of Wikipedia.
Frederick Walter Stephen West was an English serial killer who committed at least 12 murders between 1967 and 1987 in Gloucestershire, the majority with his second wife, Rosemary West. All the victims were young women. At least 8 of these murders involved the West sexual gratification and included rape, bondage, torture, and mutilation. The victims' dismembered bodies typically buried in the cellar or garden of the West's Cromwell Street home in Gloucester, which became known as the House of Horrors. Fred is known to have committed at least 2 murders in his own, while Rose is known to have murdered Fred's stepdaughter, Charmaine. The couple were apprehended and charged in 1994. Fred fatally asphyxiated himself while on remand at HM Prison, Birmingham, on the 1st of January 1995, at which time he and Rose were jointly charged with 9 murders, and he with 3 further murders. In November of 1995, Rose was convicted of 10 murders and sentenced to 10 life terms with a whole life order. So this is going to be a multi-part episode of Dark Side of Wikipedia, because this is a long and very disturbing entry that we're going to be diving into. So we'll see how far we get into this one today. And then the next Monday, Tuesday episode will be the part 2 and maybe part 3 if we need to. I'm not quite sure. We'll just kind of see how it goes. And then at the end of that, there'll be the final chapter to the whole thing. So our final chapter at the end of the series of episodes for this series. It's Tony and Carol with you on The Dark Side of Wikipedia today. And this is an interesting one. I just heard about it myself. Obviously, it's a couple years old, but it is a messed up story.
I have never heard of this.
Well, aren't you excited to hear about a really bad murder situation that you've never heard about? It's like, well, Dateline jackpot.
I know. I hate to admit it.
Yeah.
But I am the person who like binge watches all those shows.
Sure.
Like you watch one Dateline, you know, if you're watching them on demand, mm-hmm. It's like, well, I better watch the next one and the next one the next one.
Have you subscribed? This is not a commercial, but have you subscribed to Discovery Plus yet?
I have not.
Oh, my God.
Because there's so much else to, I just can watch Discover and,
well, that's what I
Discovery.
I watch it on Discovery Plus because that's part of that thing, and that's what I watch a lot of on there. But they have like everything they've ever done is on there, and so it's just a cornucopia of just darkness.
I know.
And baking shows.
Then when it gets too much, I go to Netflix and watch a great British baking show.
Yeah.
But like this one just is so twisted, and it's like how two people who are so messed up find each other, and then, you know, there was no balance. There's no like, hey, you can't be killing people. It's like, hey, this is a team, which is really twisted.
You got to be thinking, at one time when they were out there and just trying to figure out, what am I going to do in life? What's going to happen? And then suddenly it all just kind of came together for them.
Oh, you did.
They were sitting around and their eyes met over the garbage can.
I should not be laughing right at
the
this
flaming
moment.
Garbage can outside of Lowe's on the bad part of town. And they said, oh my God, let's go kill a whole bunch of people, shall we?
Somewhere.
You just know. I mean, that's just, you just know when you know.
Continuing on. That's everything I love about you, Tony. Right there.
I can turn any frown upside down. Or the other way, too. Continuing into the story, getting into the childhood. Frederick Walter Stephen West was born on the 29th of September, 1941, at Birkentown Cottage in Herefordshire. The first surviving child born to Walter Stephen West and Daisy Hannah Hill. Fred was of a poor family from farm workers, close-knit and mutually protective. His father was a disciplinarian and his mother, overprotective. In 1946, a family moved to Moorcourt Cottage at Moorcourt Farm, where Fred's father worked as a milking herdsman and harvest hand. The cottage had no electricity and was heated by a log fireplace. By 1951, Fred's mother had given birth to 8 children, 6 of whom survived, but Fred was always his mother's favorite. He was seen as a mother's boy and relied mostly on his siblings for companionship. The West children were expected to perform assigned chores, and all 6 did seasonal work. The 3 girls picking hops and strawberries, 3 boys harvesting wheat and hunting rabbits. The necessity of working to earn a living or even just to survive instilled a strong work ethic in Fred, who also developed a lifelong habit of petty theft. By 1957, Fred and his brother John frequently socialized at a youth club in nearby Ledbury, where his distinct and guttural Herefordshire accent marked him as a country bumpkin. He aggressively pestered women and girls whom he objectified as sources of pleasure to be used as he saw fit, and would abruptly approach and fondle them. When a girl accepted his advances, he would find his sexual performance unsatisfying, as his primary objective was his own gratification. Shortly after his 17th birthday, Fred brought a motorcycle and 2 months later suffered a fractured skull, a broken arm, a broken leg, and an accident. He was unconscious for 7 days and walked with braces for several months. Because of this incident, he developed an extreme fear of hospitals and began prone to fits of rage. 2 years later, Fred suffered a further head injury when a girl he groped on a fire escape outside a Ledbury youth club punched him, sending him falling 2 floors. In June 1961, Fred's 13-year-old sister, Kitty, told her mother that Fred had been raping her since the previous December and had impregnated her. Arrested the same month, Fred freely admitted to police he had been molesting young girls since his early teens and asked, "Doesn't everybody do it?" He was also tried on the 9th of November at Herefordshire Assizes. Though disgusted by her son's actions, Daisy had been prepared to testify in his defense. Kitty refused to testify, and the case collapsed. Much of Fred's family effectively disowned him. His mother banished him from the household, and he moved into the much Markle house of his aunt Violet. By 1962, he had reconciled with his parents, but his relationship with most of his family remained fraught. So that's the story of him.
That's messed up.
Yeah.
That is so messed up.
At least the first part of it. It keeps going. There'll be more, but I figure we should stop at that point.
Yeah, you kind of, I think with this one, you're going to have to stop and just get a breath.
Yeah.
Jeez.
Yeah.
But like the whole, doesn't everybody do that? I mean, like he has no conscience.
Mm-hmm. Well, he's got to be. I mean, if you're looking at today, they would look at him as probably insane from all the head injuries. And there's got to be something certainly not right there.
Agreed. I mean, I do, you know, and he probably suffered some traumatic brain injury and wasn't right.
Yeah.
But people have traumatic brain injuries and they don't impregnate their sister.
Oh, sure. Of course. No, but I mean, I'm just wondering how if we were to look at him today, would he be able to be that free? Where would they look at him and go,
oh, yeah,
you're a danger to yourself and others? That's what I'm wondering.
And my guess is, too, with all the kids, the parents are just like, OK, because they don't have any money, go work, do your thing. And they're not keeping track of any of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can't properly raise a child when you have a bunch of them.
No.
I'm sure that woman who had like 100 children had the TV show, The Duggars.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know how well their kids turned out, but they seem like they had one that went kind of off the tracks anyway.
Yeah.
But I just think that it would be really difficult. And when you're poor and there's not a lot of opportunities, so he's encouraged to go out and work and not saying they're blameless, but, you know, it was kind of a different time.
Sure. It was one of those, you know, they had to get by how they did, and that's they did what they did. And, you know, but it's still, I mean, you can start to understand how the mold gets, you know, going. But I'm going to guess what really accelerated it was all of the head injuries. I think you probably had someone who was already unbalanced, and then this just made it, you know, magnified it, you know, 10 times worse, if not more. Let's jump into the area of where they fell in love. The love story begins. Catherine Rhea Costello marriage. Fred became reacquainted with Catherine Rena Bernadette Costello in September of 1962 when he was 21. He had first met Costello, who came from Coast Bridge, Lancashire, at a Much Markle dance hall in 1960. He dated her for several months before she returned to Scotland. Costello was pregnant by an Asian bus driver at the time of her marriage to Fred and may have relocated from Glasgow to England due to members of her family expressing their displeasure at her being pregnant with a mixed-race child. She married Fred in Ledbury on the 17th of November, the sole guest being Fred's younger brother John. The couple initially lived in Fred's aunt's home, then moved to Coast Bridge, where Fred worked as an ice cream van driver. Rena's daughter, Charmaine, was born in March of 1963. To explain the child's mixed ancestry, Rena and Fred claimed that she had suffered a miscarriage and that Charmaine was adopted. Shortly thereafter, the couple relocated to Savoy Street in the Bridgetown district of Glasgow. In July of 1964, Rena bore Fred a daughter, Anna Marie. The child was born at the couple's Savoy Street home. The family nanny, Isa McNeil, and neighbors of the West recall Rena as a considerate mother struggling to bring up two children. Fred treated the children harshly. He kept the girls in the bottom of the bunk bed with bars fitted to the space between the bunks, effectively caging them. They were allowed out only when he was at work. Via McNeil, the West became acquainted with 16-year-old Anne McFall, a friend of McNeil's who was despondent over the death of her boyfriend in a workplace accident. McFall spent a great deal of time at the West flat. Classmates recall Fred as scruffy, dim, lethargic, and regularly in trouble. Throughout his life, he remained scarcely literate, yet displayed an aptitude for work, woodwork and artwork. He left school in December of 1956 at age 15, initially working as a laborer at the Moorcourt Farm. Fred claimed he was introduced to sex by his mother at 12, to have engaged in acts of bestiality with animals in his early teens, and that his belief in incest being normal stemmed from his father's incest with Fred's sisters. Fred's youngest brother, Doug, dismissed these claims as fantasy on Fred's part. Fred later admitted to engaging in numerous affairs in the early years of his marriage and fathered one illegitimate child with a woman from the Gorbals. When Rena discovered her husband's infidelity, she began an affair with a man named John McLaughlin. On one occasion, Fred discovered the pair in an embrace. He punched Rena, making her scream. In response, McLaughlin punched Fred, who drew a knife and grazed McLaughlin's abdomen. When punched by McLaughlin a second time, Fred stopped defending himself. Years later, McLaughlin recollected this incident. He couldn't tackle the man, but he wasn't so low in attacking women. He and Rena continued their affair, and McLaughlin became increasingly aghast at Rena's bruises and black eyes. On each occasion, it became apparent Fred had beat his wife. McLaughlin extensively beat Fred. Another time, McLaughlin witnessed Charmaine, a little older than a toddler, ask Fred for an ice cream from his van. In response, Fred struck her across the head, triggering another beating from McLaughlin. On the 4th of November, 1965, Fred accidentally ran over and killed a small boy in Glasgow with his van. Fred was cleared of any wrongdoing by police, but feared the hostile reaction of potential reprisals for the incident from the locals, whom he relied upon to make his living. In December, he returned to Gloucestershire with Charlemagne and Anna Marie, renting a caravan at the Timberland Caravan Park in Bishop's Cleeve. Rena joined him in February of 1966, accompanied by Isa McNeil and Anne McFall, who also moved in to Fred's caravan. McNeil and McFall both came from impoverished backgrounds. Both hoped to find work in England. Shortly after the move south, Fred found employment driving a lorry for a local abattoir. By early 1966, Fred had begun to exhibit dominance and control over all three women. He was also prone to violent mood swings, and Rena and McNeil typically bore the brunt of his fury. Fred also physically attacked his stepdaughter more than once. He's also reported to have begun sexually abusing Charmaine and to have encouraged Rena to turn to prostitution to supplement his meager income. To escape Fred's domestic abuse and increasingly sadistic sexual demands, Rena phoned McLaughlin begging him to rescue her. McNeil and her children together, McLaughlin, Rena, and McNeil devised a plan. He and McNeil's boyfriend, John Trotter, would secretly drive to Bishop's Cleeve in McLaughlin's Mini and discreetly take Rena, her children, and McNeil back to Scotland. McFall had, by this stage, become infatuated with Fred, who had promised to marry her. It's likely she informed Fred of the plan. As he arrived at the meeting time, McFall was oddly calm as she informed McNeil she intended to remain with Fred to work as a children's nanny. An altercation ensued between Fred and McLaughlin, resulting in Fred being struck several times as he clutched onto Charlemagne and Anna Marie. Police were called to McLaughlin. Trotter, McNeil, and Rena left, with Fred threatening to kill Rena should he ever see her again. To ensure her daughter's well-being, Rena frequently traveled to England to visit Charlemagne and Anna Marie while they lived with Fred at Bishop's Cleeve. Despite initially maintaining her friendship with McFall, Rena soon began to resent her matriarchal presence around her daughters. On the 11th of October, in an act of resentment, Rena stole some belongings from Fred's caravan and returned to Glasgow. She was arrested the following month and returned to Gloucestershire to face trial. On the 29th of November, Rena was sentenced to 3 years probation. Fred testified at the hearing, admitting he and McFall were living together, but falsely claiming McFall intended to return to Scotland imminently. After the trial, McFall moved into a caravan at the Timberland Caravan Park. Rena alternated between living with Fred and returning to Glasgow. Letters McFall posted in her family and McNeil in Glasgow between 1966 and 1967 indicate she believed her relationship with Fred could offer her a better life than she had experienced in Scotland, and she tried to persuade Fred to divorce his wife in order that he could marry her. I totally see what they all see in him. I mean, who wouldn't?
Like, I don't even get it.
I think I would even fall for him. I mean, that's the power that this guy has.
Yeah, sounds so charming.
Yeah. I mean, my God. What on earth? How? Why? And not just, like, one, but he had, like, multiple women that were, like, all, like, following this guy.
Well, and I wonder, too, sometimes in situations like that, like, it's that kind of Stockholm syndrome thing. Mm-hmm. Like he's really abusive and everything, but then he convinces him that it's all you, or you know, I wouldn't have to do that if you wouldn't have done this. And,
yeah,
you know, kind of flips the blame around him on them. And I don't know. Like, I don't understand that.
Well, he does look like a young George Clooney. So does that have anything?
Well,
I'm kidding. He doesn't. I'm just completely making that.
If that's the case, then
no, he doesn't at all.
Do whatever he wants.
Not at all. Looks kind of like a creepy guy, but yeah, wow, he holds some power. It seems.
I mean, everybody. Like, I've dated guys. I haven't dated anything like that, but like, I've dated guys that my friends are like, "What are you doing?" Like, He's just an asshole.
Yeah.
You don't know him like I know him. And, you know, I think that you just put these blinders on and you want to believe this is something that it's not.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. That's just, I'm throwing that out there. I have no idea.
And then finally, you're sitting there and you're like, holy shit. I can't believe the guy that I've been dating. He's this crazy motherfucker. He's messing with his daughter and Casey. I still love him. Could you please play Roxette? Here you go. Yeah. So it's Jesus Christ.
But I love him.
But I love him
so much. I don't get it.
Borderline cult leader. Karen taking people.
But I've always liked guys like that.
Oh, God. Let's continue on. Because it keeps going. In July 1967, McFall, aged 18 and 8 months pregnant with Fred's child, vanished. She was never reported missing, but her dismembered remains were found buried at the edge of a cornfield between Much Markle and Kempley in June 1994. Her limbs had been carefully disarticulated, and many flange bones were missing from her body, likely to have been retained as keepsakes. Her unborn child may also have been cut from her womb. Fred initially denied that he had killed McFall, but confided to one visitor following his arrest that he had stabbed her to death following an argument. This explanation is inconsistent with the fact that her wrists were found with sections of dressing gown cord wrapped around them, suggesting she had been restrained prior to her murder. The following month, Rita returned to live with Fred, and the couple relocated to the Lake House Caravan Park. Their relationship initially improved, but Rita left the following year, again leaving the children in his care. On these occasions, and Fred had no woman to supervise and care for the girls, he temporarily placed them in the care of Gloucester Social Services. Fred first encountered Rosemary Letts in early 1969, shortly after her 15th birthday. The pair first met at the Cheltenham bus station. Initially, Rose was repulsed by Fred's unkempt appearance and deduced he was a tramp, but she quickly became flattered by the attention Fred continued to lavish on her over the following days as he irrevocably sat alongside her at the same bus stop. Rose twice refused to go on a date with Fred, but allowed him to accompany her home. In their initial conversations, Fred quickly discovered that although Rose had never had a boyfriend, she was overly promiscuous. He also extracted a degree of sympathy for her by claiming he and his two daughters had been abandoned by his wife and that he wished for more children. Having discovered Rose worked in a nearby bread shop a few days after their first encounter, Fred persuaded an unknown woman to enter the premises and present her with a gift accompanied by an explanation that a man outside had asked her to present this gift to her. Minutes later, Fred entered the premises and asked Rose to accompany him on a date that evening, an offer that she accepted. Shortly thereafter, Rose began a relationship with Fred, becoming a frequent visitor at the Lake House Caravan and a willing childminder to Charmaine and Anna Marie, whom she noted were neglected and whom she initially treated with care and affection. On several occasions in the early days of their courtship, Rose insisted she and Fred take the girls on excursions to gather wildflowers. Within weeks of her first meeting, Fred Rose left her job at the bread shop in order to become a nanny to Charlemagne and Anna Marie. This decision was made with the agreement that Fred would provide her with sufficient money to give to her parents on Fridays to convince them that she was still obtaining a salary at the bread shop. Several months later, Rose introduced Fred to her family, who were aghast at their daughter's choice of partner. Rose's mother, Daisy Letts, was unimpressed with Fred's bravado and correctly concluded he was a pathological liar. Her father, Bill Letts, a diagnosed schizophrenic who is believed to have molested his daughter, vehemently disapproved of the relationship, threatening Fred directly and promising to call social services if he continued to date his daughter. Rose's parents forbade their daughter from continuing to date Fred, but she defied their wishes, prompting them to visit Gloucestershire Social Services to explain that their 15-year-old daughter was dating an older man, that they had heard rumors that she had begun to engage in prostitution at his caravan. In response, Rose was placed in a home for troubled teenagers in Cheltenham in August of 1969 and only allowed to leave under controlled conditions. When allowed to return home to visit her parents at weekends, Rose almost invariably took the opportunity to visit Fred. On her 16th birthday, Rose left the home for troubled teenagers to return to her parents. Fred at the time serving a 30-day sentence for theft and unpaid fines. Upon Fred's release, Rose left her parents' home to move into the Cheltenham flat that flat Fred then lived in. Shortly thereafter, Fred collected Charmaine and Anna Marie from social services. Bill Letts made one final effort to prevent his daughter from seeing Fred, and Rose was examined by a police surgeon on February 1970, who confirmed she was pregnant. In response, Rose was again placed into care but was discharged on the 6th of March on the understanding she would terminate her pregnancy and return to her family. Instead, Rose opted to live with Fred, resulting in her father forbidding his daughter from ever again setting foot in his house. 3 months later, the couple vacated the Cheltenham flat and relocated to the ground floor flat of a two-story house in Midland Road in Gloucestershire. On the 17th of October, 1970, Rose gave birth to their first child, a daughter they named Heather Ann. Speculation remains that Heather may have been sired by Rose's own father. 2 months later, Fred was imprisoned for the theft of car tires and a vehicle tax disc. He remained in prison until the 24th of June, 1971. As he served this 6.5-month sentence, Rose, having just turned 17, looked after the three girls, with Charmaine and Anna Marie being told to refer to Rose as their mother. According to Anna Marie West, she and Charmaine were frequently subjected to criticism, beatings, and other forms of punishment throughout the time they lived under Rose's care at Midland Road. But although Anna Marie was generally submissive and prone to display emotion in response to the physical and mental hardships she and her sister endured, Charmaine repeatedly infuriated Rose by her stoic refusal to either cry or display any sign of grief or servitude, no matter how severely she was physically punished. Despite the years of neglect and abuse, Charmaine's spirit had not been broken, and she talked wistfully to Anna Marie of her belief that she held that her mummy will come and save me. Anna Marie later recollected her sister repeatedly antagonized Rose by making statements such as, "My real mummy wouldn't swear or shout at us," in response to Rose's scathing language. A childhood friend of Charmaine's named Tracy Giles, who lived in the upper flat of Midland Road, would later recollect an incident in which she had entered the West Flat unannounced, only to see Charmaine naked and standing upon a chair, gagged and with her hands bound behind her back with a belt, as Rose stood alongside the child with a large wooden spoon in her hand. According to Giles, Charmaine had been calm and unconcerned, while Anna Marie had been standing by the door with a blank expression on her face. Hospital records reveal Charmaine had received treatment for a severe puncture wound to her left ankle in a casualty unit of the Gloucestershire Royal Hospital on the 28th of March, 1971. This incident was explained by Rose to have resulted from a household accident. Rose is believed to have killed Charmaine shortly before Fred's prison release, the date of the 24th of June, 1971. She's known to have taken Charmaine, Anna Marie, and Heather to visit Fred on the 15th of June. It's believed to be on or very shortly after this date that Charmaine was murdered, as well as a forensic odontology confirmation that Charmaine had died while Fred was still incarcerated. Further testimony from Giles' mother surely corroborated the fact that Charmaine had been murdered before Fred had been released on the 24th of June. In her later testimony at Rose's trial, Shirley Giles stated that she and her family had lived in the upper flat of 25 Midland Road in 1971, and that her two daughters had been playmates of Charmaine and Anna Marie. Shirley Giles stated that after her family had vacated the upper flat of Midland Road in April of 1971, on one day in June, she had brought Tracy to visit Charmaine, only for Tracy to be told by Rose, "She's gone to live with her mother, and bloody good riddance," before Tracy began to weep. Giles was adamant Fred was still in prison on this occasion. And with the Giles family, Rose explained Charmaine's disappearance to others who inquired about her whereabouts by claiming that Rena had called and taken her eldest daughter to live with her in Bristol. She informed staff at Charmaine's primary school that the child had moved with her mother to London. While Fred was released from prison on the 24th of June, he allayed Anna Marie's concerns for her sister's whereabouts by claiming her mother had collected Charmaine and returned to Scotland. In her autobiography, Out of the Shadows, Anna Marie recollected that when she asked why her mother had collected Charmaine but not her, Fred callously replied, "She wouldn't want you, love. You're the wrong color." Charmaine's body was initially stowed in the coal cellar of Midland Road until Fred was released from prison. He later buried her naked body in the yard close to the back door of the flat, and he remained adamant he had not dismembered her. A subsequent autopsy suggested the body had been severed at the hip. This damage may have been caused by building work Fred conducted on the property in 1976. Several bones, particularly platelet, finger, wrist, toe, and ankle bones, were missing from her skeleton, leading to speculation the missing parts had been retained as keepsakes. This proved to be a distinctive discovery in all the autopsies of the victims exhumed in 1994. Well, there you go. Maybe soup bones, you know, keeping them out for soup.
Oh, my God. There was so much in that that really upset me.
Oh, my God.
That was really hard to listen to.
You got
to
think, if somebody's capable of doing this shit, they're probably also capable of making people soup. So.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
I just hate hearing things like that about kids. Like, that just.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's so many, but like the fact that any woman could have left their child with him to start with.
Sure.
Like what?
Yeah. Well, just the very basics. Yes. You start with that and it just kind of goes from there.
Ends up with this girl who's 15 or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So she has no maternal instincts whatsoever anyway, because she's 15, but she's also been molested by her own father. So she's been brought up in a horrible childhood.
Yeah.
She has, you know, so she has no way, like, she can't take care of kids.
No.
You know, there's just so much there that was very upsetting.
There is, and it just keeps going. Very soon, we're going to learn some more about the murder of Catherine Rena West. It keeps going. There's a lot more murder to be had. But we've just for a moment, we got to, you know, sit back and think a little bit about, you know, if you're in the shoes of the loved ones who care about crazy old Fred here, and you're like, what can we do? What can we do so he can change his ways and things won't be completely horrible, for him forever? What exactly would it take? And that's where you got to think. Love and tenderness. That's right. So you say that you murdered your daughter and you're taking finger bones for soup? You must be lying. Or maybe, just maybe, you need a little bit of time, love, and tenderness. So you say that you can't go on. No.
So fucked up.
You murdered your daughter and then you... Yeah, okay, anyway. That was the inspiration for that song. Did you know that?
Yeah, no.
That whole murder story.
I had no idea.
It's in the liner notes to that Michael Bolton album. It's I want to thank Fred, what's his name, for the inspiration for this song. Your timeless efforts. I can't even do it. Oh, God. Yeah.
And by the way, that wasn't true what he just said about Michael Bolton for somebody who's like, oh, my God, I heard it in a podcast. It's gotta be true.
Gotta be true. Heard in a podcast, and you know,
because only true things are in podcasts.
It's on the internet. It's gotta be fucking true. Yeah. So, good old Fred.
What the hell? Like that whole story just effed up.
And we're only in part one. This is probably gonna be like a three-parter, is what I'm thinking. So, brace yourself.
I can handle this one.
Brace yourself. It's gonna be a lot of murder. So that's going to wrap up today's episode of The Dark Side of Wikipedia. If you like the show, help keep us on the air. Become a Dark Sider. When you become a Dark Sider, you get access to our advanced episodes months before the release to the public. You can start binging away. It's the full things, everything, including the final chapters, which there will be a final chapter to this once we reach the conclusion of this story. In all of our final chapters, all the archive, it's all there. Go to patreon.com/darksideofwikipedia or our website, darksideofwiki, and click Become a Dark Sider. $5 a month gets you access to all the stuff, and it helps keep us on the air. We greatly appreciate that. Until next time, for Carol, I'm Tony. Thanks for listening to The Dark Side of Wikipedia.
Lots of places can accidentally expose you to identity theft. Doctor's offices, online retailers, insurance companies, the list goes on. Thankfully, LifeLock monitors hundreds of millions of data points a second for threats to your identity, which is way more than anyone can do on their own. LifeLock keeps an eye on your personal information, credit applications, finances, and more. And if they find anything suspicious, like new loans or changes to your financial accounts, they alert you right away. All through text, phone, email, or the LifeLock app. Even better, alerts are automatically activated the moment you become a LifeLock member. No extra work on your part. Get the alerts that could make all the difference. Don't wait. Join LifeLock now. Visit LifeLock.com/iHeart and save up to 30% your first year. That's LifeLock.com/iHeart for 30% off. Terms apply.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Lots of places can accidentally expose you to identity theft. Doctor's offices, online retailers, insurance companies. The list goes on. Thankfully, LifeLock monitors hundreds of millions of data points a second for threats to your identity, which is way more than anyone can do on their own. LifeLock keeps an eye on your personal information, credit applications, finances, and more. And if they find anything suspicious, like new loans or changes to your financial accounts, they alert you right away. All through text, phone, email, or the LifeLock app. Even better, alerts are automatically activated the moment you become a LifeLock member. No extra work on your part. Get the alerts that could make all the difference. Don't wait. Join LifeLock now. Visit LifeLock.com/iHeart and save up to 30% your first year. That's LifeLock.com/iHeart for 30% off. Terms apply.
Hey, it's Cole Swindell. And when I spend 200 days a year rolling down the highway, the bus can start to feel smaller than a guitar case. Everyone wonders how I stay chill while the hours crawl by. Truth is, one good luck spent on Chumba, and suddenly the trip feels a whole lot shorter. Finding your space, even when there isn't much to spare. Need some chill? Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus TNC supply. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Nobody does it better than Regent Seven Seas Cruises. Enjoy all-inclusive, unrivaled luxury with unlimited shore excursions, indulgent cuisine, personalized service, and more aboard spacious all-suite ships. Visit rssc.com to experience the unrivaled.
Out here, if you're doing nothing, you're doing everything right. Though on a cruise with Norwegian, even if you're doing nothing, you're still basking in the warm sun, enjoying the peaceful ocean waves, you're breathing. Don't forget about breathing. Definitely need to be breathing. So you get to do nothing, or everything, but you still need to be breathing. It's like really important.
Experience the difference with cruises to Alaska, the Caribbean, and Europe. Norwegian Cruise Line. It's different out here. Visit NCL.com, call your travel advisor, or 1-888-NCL-CRUISE. Norwegian Cruise Line ships registry, the Bahamas and USA.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Lots of places can accidentally expose you to identity theft. Doctor's offices, online retailers, insurance companies. The list goes on. Thankfully, LifeLock monitors hundreds of millions of data points a second for threats to your identity, which is way more than anyone can do on their own. LifeLock keeps an eye on your personal information, credit applications, finances, and more. And if they find anything suspicious, like new loans or changes to your financial accounts, they alert you right away. All through text, phone, email, or the LifeLock app. Even better, alerts are automatically activated the moment you become a LifeLock member. No extra work on your part. Get the alerts that could make all the difference. Don't wait. Join LifeLock now. Visit LifeLock.com/iHeart and save up to 30% your first year. That's LifeLock.com/iHeart for 30% off. Terms apply.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Lots of places can expose you to identity theft. That's why LifeLock monitors hundreds of millions of data points a second for threats to your identity, which is way more than anyone can do on their own. If we find anything suspicious, like new loans or changes to your financial accounts, we alert you right away, all through text, phone, email, or the LifeLock app. Save up to 30% your first year. Visit LifeLock.com/iHeart. Terms apply.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.